Well, we'll get you back to 2 minutes here. Now, on the big questions. Governor Walker has proposed the new Sustainable Alaska Plan. What, if anything, would you change about that?
I have not read it yet, to be honest with you. So,
Thank you for your candor.
I'm busy running, opening up businesses and building my home, so have not had a chance to read it yet.
Thank you for your candor about that. Or Ms. Wyatt, how do you prefer?
I think the governor's plan is he's got a good starting place in some place in some aspects, and I think he started the conversation well. He finished it poorly. He started the conversation with go to Alaskans and ask them their input and their opinion, but I believe he arrived already with his plan in place, and from what I can tell, nothing about that plan has wavered one bit. There are aspects I know that from my position as the mayor, I have proposed a couple of recommendations that I have never even seen surface outside of his direct cabinet and office that makes me go, okay, they haven't even really looked at those. There are opportunities for looking at the way they do financing that they have not explored that I can see, and I think they need to do that. So the governor came with his plan in place, and he is trying to tell you that it's your fault that you haven't chosen to agree with his plan. You're not responsible or required to agree with his plan. If he can't convince you or develop the platform for his plan that helps you agree with it, then he's just bullying you, and he did that with the budget when he took your permanent fund away. So I think there are aspects of it that are really valuable that will be helpful for the state, but he needs to talk to Alaskans more. He needs to help you understand why his plan is feasible, and he has not done the work.
And so what parts of the plan would you change?
I would change his funding philosophy, that we start with taking permanent fund as the source of revenue and go back again and look at where we can modify and reduce expenses in other places than taking your money away.
Thank you. Would you see?
Thank you. I just have to disagree with the opinions that hasn't been shopped. I mean, there was a conference that was televised all over the state of 300 people in Anchorage. They went through that. I had two town hall meetings down here, one packed, overpacked Islands and Oceans, and then we had one in Inilchik, and then I've done surveys, and the survey with 40 questions of how do you want to look at revenues, that we did that online. We had 300 people respond to that in this district, and the responses were 71% said they wanted an income tax, 78% said we needed to cut oil and gas tax credits, I think it was 82% said we needed to not let the oil companies offset taxes on the North Slope. So the data is out there. People have been asked. There's been multiple hearings. But the problem with the bill, as I see it, is it was complex. It restructured the dividend. It restructured the permanent fund the way it went, where royalties went, and required about 9 other taxes to fill in the place. So I proposed a plan, House Bill 365. It's on my website. It's also on the campaign website. And it looks a lot simpler. What it does is it says instead of taking 50% of the tax of the 5-year average of earnings for dividends, you take 25% of it, and 25% goes to the general fund. You take 2.3% of a POMV, which on the permanent fund, which generates $1.1 billion, and you have a income tax of 15% of what you have on the federal tax, and that generates $655 million, and we can balance the budget, and we can preserve the CBR, and we can get there in a way that's equitable.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Friends of the Homer Public Library, District 31 Candidate Forum here on KBBI AM 890 Homer. The forum was recorded on Friday, August 6th.
We've talked about cutting.
No, did John? Did you answer?
Yes. Okay. After.
That's okay.
Okay. I did read that bill, and so, but my time's passed. So.
Thanks. Good enough. Okay. Other than reducing tax incentives, other than cutting state expenses, please identify two sources of income that the state could utilize to bring in income sources.
I think right now a primary income source that we have basically ignored, partially because people don't like the fact that they attach it to global warming, which is a controversial issue, but I think you cannot miss the fact that the Arctic is opening to transport. And New York City and New York State have been spending billions of dollars developing infrastructure to provide support industry to them. I believe strongly Alaska is a lot closer to the Arctic than New York, and we have done nothing substantive across the state of Alaska to really address. We could get a piece of that. We need to be focusing on how we can bring Arctic revenues into the state of Alaska. I think that's like a number one top priority to me. And then you said two items that are non-budget and non...
Andy? Oh, I'm sorry.
You said two items that are non-budget and non... What was the second
one? Sure, so non-tax incentive and non-tax
incentive.
I'm not talking about those.
Right.
I'm looking for sources,
Of additional revenue. I think that, yeah, for me, the Arctic is the biggest one. And then really supporting the industries that are here. I think Alaskans... I've lived here since 73. I came when oil and gas was just starting, and it really changed the face of Alaska. But Alaskans lived here for years and generations before oil and gas came in, and they were very innovative, and they were able to create commerce basically from nothing. And so I think Alaskans have the ability to be the cure that we're looking for if we can get out of their way with permitting and out of their way with business taxation and those things that stymie them from developing on their own. So we need to support Alaskans in developing those businesses that will be the cure for our financial future.
The problem with many of the solutions that have been talked about are they all cost money. You know, the mayor just said spending billions on supporting Arctic infrastructure. That's right. You need deep water ports. You need all of these things. That's not generating revenue for the state. That's an outflow. Supporting industries. We need to support industries. The timber industry. It cost us more when we were trying to do timber for the roads that were harvesting that than we made from the timber industry. You know, we've had grain terminals. We've had... we had a fish plant in Alaska for secondary processing. The state has tried to force new economic development, and every time we have gone backwards. So the way we get there is we get there through the revenues that are available and are used in every single state, whether it's a state sales tax, a state property tax, a state income tax. And the state income tax makes the most sense because 20% of our employees in this state are non-residents. They're paying income tax on the money they make in Alaska, but they're paying it to their home state. If we had an income tax here, they would pay it to us instead of to their home state. Capital gains tax is the other part. California, Oregon, Idaho all have capital gain taxes now, and they are the places that have seen a budgetary circumstance that they can be sustainable and live with, whereas like Washington State does not, and they have a big budgetary problem. So those two sources are what were proposed in House Bill 365 to be paired with a reduction in the permanent fund dividend to provide a sustainable budget.
Don't laugh at this one. Hey, let's do something fun. Let's bring Powerball to the state of Alaska. People will want to invest money. They'll spend their money. They'll give it to you. Let's open up the lumber industry. Paul said it doesn't work. Well, that's because the government got involved. Open it up and let the private sector do its job. When the private sector grows, income grows. There's a saying that we learned in business school in college. It said, when you have employees fighting for jobs, when you have more jobs, employees stop fighting for each other. With each other. When you have more jobs, employers start fighting for employees. When you have more jobs, wages go up because employers fight for employees. So you're going to have that income tax, that expenditure, people spending money in the state. And that's what we need. We need to grow businesses here, the private sector business. The state and the federal government does nothing but create dependence. We need to get them out of it completely. Let you, I'm a businessman, and I own a small business, Fine Cigar and Loose Tobacco. I could hire 15, 20 people. Well, for example, I pay 75% of the price of my product as taxes. That's crazy. I would rather pay that 75% to my employees, and in turn, they'll turn around and spend it in the local economy, which will generate taxes and income for the state.
Okay, thank you. So I got a lot of cards to go through, so we're going to switch to 1 minute here for a while. I love this one. Sacrifice has been talked about in the national level of politics. What do you expect us to sacrifice as voters in the local level?
State level?
What do you expect us? Okay.
State.
Well, okay, it's what do you expect us to sacrifice as local voters, probably. It's a good way to put it. What do you expect us to sacrifice as voters? Let's put it that way.
Well, there's two things we're going to sacrifice. We're either going to sacrifice some money to sustain the services, or you're going to sacrifice the services. Your infrastructure is going to go to pot. You know, you're not going to have people at the road maintenance department. You're not going to have people at the hospital. You're not going to have people doing the airports on time. All of these things are going to be there because state services are going to be cut drastically if we don't sacrifice some money to sustain the budget of Alaska and the services that the people have generally said they don't want to go back to 1960 when I first came up here. The level of service that they had in 1960 and gravel roads from here to, you know, here to Kenai and those kind of things. But, you know, if we don't have a CBR to draw from, you can't take all the permanent fund dividend, or if you do, it's still not enough to get you there. It's only halfway there if you took all of it.
You came up here in the early 60s?
Man, you're old. Hey, you're a senior citizen.
We're going to have to, as a businessman, I know we all fall on hard times. We really do. And as a Catholic, I believe in giving a helping hand, but I don't believe in a free handout. Now, we have a lot of youngsters that are willing to just take from the state in the form of assistance. Let me give you an example. Last year, when the federal government said the unemployment rate was going to stop, right, my doors at my business was like a revolving door. I had people coming in every single day saying, hey, are you hiring? You're hiring, hiring. And I'm going, no, I can't afford it right now. But once the federal government said they extended that unemployment rate, it stopped. Those are some of the areas that we need to stop. You know, when I remember when I first got out of the Navy the first time, your unemployment was good for 60 days or 90 days, and that was it.
Okay, let's talk about education. The Alaska State Library. I'm sorry, I threw so many cards over here.
That's
I apologize.
That's totally fine.
Thank you.
It would be unrealistic to imagine that in the economy that we face today, there will not be cuts to services. Whether it's going to be a hardship to you is dependent on your perspective. What some people would perceive as a hardship release or a hardship cut, others are going to go, thank goodness we're no longer doing that. So I think that we start, and again, any of you that have been in the city of Homer, you know I start with non-essential things. And there's a lot of nice things that are quality of life issues. Parks, recreation, those activities, those are nice to have. Life will go on without them. So I think we work with Alaskans, we identify what's nice to have, what we can do without. And again, like I said, the governor did a great platform for that, but never followed through and told us, what did Alaskans say they could do without? I have never seen that published. So if Alaskans think we can do without it until we're in a better financial position to have it, we should be cutting those services and starting there. But we will be having to cut services because revenues are not here yet. So that is it. I think that's a given.
Thank you. I apologize cutting you off. Let's talk about education and sacrifices. The Alaska State Library is an allocation within the Alaska Department of Education appropriation. Some of the funds directed to the state library get passed along both in direct grants to local libraries, but also to programs like OWL and Best Beginnings. I'd like to know your position on funding the Alaska State Library.
That is interesting. I guess I haven't explored that really in depth, but I know that we benefit from those services. To the degree that it is a repository, suspend the support until you can afford to continue supporting it. To the degree that it provides services in communities that are essential, I know our services keep our library open so that kids are able to come here after school, and in that case, you're subsidizing daycare by having your library open. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best choice. But I think we have to look at those things hardly, and it may or may not be worth continuing. You have to look at what the benefit is, and are you getting out of the contribution the benefit that you anticipated, and is it at the value?
This is a choice that residents have to make, what's important to you and what's not. If people are not willing to contribute to the financial health of the state, then the services that they're receiving are going to go away. That's just it. Online with libraries got some cut, but was still there. Some of the educational materials that are sent around are, from the state. Those are going to disappear. You cannot cut 70% of your budget and maintain the services that most Alaskans, I think, want. Our problem is that we haven't reached that point where people have said, oh, do I want these services or not? They just say, we want the services and we don't want to pay anything. And that's the dilemma we're at right now. And whether we have to close the library and other functions before people realize that they really did like those services, we'll find out.
I have to agree with Paul on that, except let's focus a little bit more. That's a tough subject here, especially when there's lovely library. We might get struck by lightning. The idea and the concept of print is long gone. So as far as libraries, we need to focus more towards a digital age where it's smaller, it's easier to handle. It's quite expensive to maintain hardback books and stuff like that. So like Paul says, you as the voters and the community are going to have to decide what you want.
Okay. Let's talk about the University of Alaska has received significant cuts this year, which will almost certainly affect everything from leveraged federal research dollars to our local Kachemak Bay and Kenai campuses. I'd like to know your position on funding of the University of Alaska.
Well, I thought the cut to the University of Alaska was too steep, but then when we didn't get any revenues generated, I understand completely why the governor had to look around every place he could. The $10 million that he took out was tough, but it wasn't so tough that it closed closed campuses. I was successful in getting intent language into the budget that said that the cuts to the university would be to non-core functions and that we would be maintaining the rural campuses. So that was in there and it stayed all the way through the budget, so that intent language is still in there. But there are things that are going to go away. I mean, intercollegiate sports, I can tell you right now, are going to be gone in 2 years. There will be no intercollegiate sports in the University of Alaska, which, isn't the worst thing in the world, but it's one of those changes that is going to be there for the university.
That's correct. But I don't believe the cuts have been made hard enough. See, the universities are a business. Is that not right? They're a business.
No, it's not.
They're there to make money.
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, well, I'm not going to win this one here, am I? Again, we have to make cuts all around. And one of the subjects Paul talked about was like the collegiate sports. Do you know that less than 1% of all students that participate in sporting events will ever make it to the professional level? And that's why the majority of the kids join high school sports or college sports, so that they can become professionals. I know a lot of them enjoy it, but those are areas that we do have to make cuts. We just can't afford it to continue on. Now, let me give you an example. Right now.
Thank you. You know, I just want to say you guys have done such an incredibly good job.
Did I answer?
I really appreciate it.
If we take some
time, I don't think I answered yet.
You did.
I didn't answer yet. I was first. Sorry. I think that cuts to the university, for me, economic development funds and university funds are kind of last place that you would want to cut, because those are drivers to your economic engine. People come into Alaska to go to the university. People attend University of Alaska online. I took my entire education online with students all over the world. Like, you know, we had people in China and Japan and people everywhere attending University of Alaska classes. So there is an income stream there for them. University cuts need to look at programs that are not sustaining themselves or contributing to the larger value of the university. And with regards to sports and athletics, I think that sports and athletics are an integral part of any educational program. They, kids that otherwise would never go to school and succeed will succeed if they can participate in sports, and that is proven fact. With the university perspective on sports, if the state quits funding sports, they're going to have supporters that will step up. I mean, there are people that will invest large dollars in maintaining university sports, so I don't think they're going away, though the state may quit funding them.
Thank you. Let's talk about the proposed gas line.
The LNG?
You know, this one.
Are you talking about the Homer gas line or
no,
LNG?
The LNG. Do you support the current level of expenditures on the proposed gas line, or more or less?
No. The cost to get the LNG gas to the where it's got to go is exceeding the value of the market right now. So that is like the Susitna Bridge, or the dam, the Susitna Dam, the Kinnick Bridge, a few of these other projects that will help out Alaskans. They're great projects, wonderful, but we can't afford them right now. So they have to go on the wayside and just put them on hold for a little while. You know, like the Kinnick Bridge, that project's been in effect since 1926. And it's taken them this long to even get to this point. Every time we turn around, they keep saying, oh, well, we got to do this. So the bridge to the road to Juneau, come on. Let's move Juneau up to Anchorage like the voters wanted. But like I said, we can't afford these projects right now, so we have to put them on hold for a little while.
I do support the LNG project. I think it's going to be a really, just as the oil pipeline has been a huge contributor to the state of Alaska, the LNG pipeline will be the same. I think it's a project that is not going to happen and is not financially viable unless the big industry is willing to carry the majority of the load. Saying, oh, well, the state of Alaska is going to take control of that and pay for that is, to me, unrealistic. It isn't sustainable to build. It isn't sustainable to maintain. If you don't have gas flowing through it, it's not sustainable in any format whatsoever. So when the oil industry is ready to stay and contribute into that, that will go forward and they will have got the foundation. They will get, pretty soon, they'll get to a natural pause place, because when you have your feed and your pre-feed complete, that's data that you can retain for a long period of time without losing the value of what you've already contributed. So getting it to that place where they can save and retain all of the contribution they've made so far, that makes good sense to me. But beyond that, when the industry is ready to contribute to that is when it's going to be successful and move forward. Does it need to move forward? Yes, it will be a substantial contributor to the future of Alaska's economy. Does it need to move forward today? The industry will determine that based on what's going on in the market.
The AK LNG project, the 42-inch diameter line to bring 4 billion cubic feet a day down to from the North Slope to Cook Inlet, is in a hold pattern because of the economics of the gas supplies around the world and the changing technology, which has made cheaper gas available. So if it's not economic, it's not going to go forward. One of the problems with the economics is that the major oil and gas companies have a 17 to 20% hurdle rate. In other words, they want to make 17 to 20% on their money every year. It has to have that kind of return. So that's a huge burden to place on a large project, multiple things gas treatment plants, liquefaction plants, 800-mile pipeline. So the current look is to see if we can get money from sources that look for an 8 to 10% hurdle rate. That means 8 to 10% money back to them. And there's a lot of investors that want to do that. You know, retirement funds, there's mega retirement funds that would love to have 8 to 10% return rate. Now, can they take the risk profile of that? Question was, would the producer sell the gas? Well, they're required under the contract. If it's economic, they have to sell the gas. But so that'll be a contentious issue. But right now, it's really on hold because of the economics of the project. So they're finishing up the pre-feed stage, so they come to the stopping point. But it'll require the state to change the mix of the investors that are going to be paying for that. We're not going to be pledging the permanent fund. It would be from other investors that would come forward with lower hurdle rates or lower investment return rates.
Okay, a couple of quick questions before we get to the closing statements.
Yeah.
Mr. Cox, yeah, sure.
I'll talk again if you want me.
No, you're good. Thanks, I appreciate it. With ever-increasing globalization, how many countries have you visited, excluding military service? And do you speak languages other than English?
Interesting question. No, I do not speak languages other than English. That's one of those things that, you know, when I spoke Russian in high school, I quit doing that when I graduated high school. So I have traveled in my life across the United States, through Canada, through Mexico, and I, as an adult, have been to Australia and to Italy by way of Germany. We had a layover in Germany briefly. So those are my countries that I have visited.
Thank you.
I am terrible with foreign languages. Only thing I got a D on in college was a second semester of German. And so languages are not my forte. I've been to a number of places, Australia, the Middle East, Turkey, Greece, Italy, some of the islands, you know, Fiji, a lot of Central America, because we brought a 47-foot shrimp boat around from Harker's Island, North Carolina, through the islands, the Bahamas and Jamaica, and through the Panama Canal and up the West Coast. So that was that route. And of course, through Canada and Mexico.
That's kind of an unfair question.
Yeah, right.
Let's see, languages. I speak, I understand Spanish. Basically, just like everybody else you get in high school, como lo está usted. It's about all I can speak of it. Travel-wise, of course, I've been around the world twice now. You name it, anywhere in the Middle East, India, Africa, Australia, Southeast Asia, Europe. I've been around Central America because of my occupation. So, oh, and there's no other place I'd rather visit than here in Alaska.
Thank you very much. I'm gonna ask you to go ahead and give us your closing statement, but I also want to preface it with a final question. Start off by telling us your favorite book, then tell us about your closing.
Thank
you. I believe you already asked that question.
We already did the book.
No, it's the most recent book.
My most favorite book is the one I read to my granddaughter, Where the Wild Things Are. Thank you for coming, and thanks to KBBI for recording this event forum. It's been an interesting discussion, and I hope you've gained some insights for making your decision. I'm a solutions guy. I work to incorporate your views. I try to open an accountable government through my website, through my weekly email newsletter. And I work for everyone, regardless of party affiliation, to solve Alaska's problems. Last fall, the town hall meetings, as I mentioned, we did the 40 questionnaire, and 71% supported a personal income tax, 78% supported reducing and eliminating cashable tax credits, 75% wanted to eliminate credits against North Slope taxes. I listened to you, and those were all in the credit reform bill, and I asked for your support for Paul Seaton for State House in this coming election. Thank you.
Yes. Is my time starting yet? Probably making me cry. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. I'm not a professional politician. I don't claim to be. I'm a patriot. And this job as your representative was meant to be a civic duty. I'd do it for free. That's what I truly believe in. Well, I'm at a loss for words. We've got some serious problems. And I'm asking you to trust me to go down there and speak for you. Not for me, but for you. And we can only do it with your support. One of the things that we need in Juneau is a financial responsibility. When I was in the military, one of the things that they sent me to do was to be a financial specialist. And what I did was I helped individuals get out of financial problems. I built portfolios for them. I did all that stuff and helped individuals get out of the debt. And that's what has to happen down in Juneau. We have got to figure out how to do this without saying, I'm going to tax you to death. Okay. So with everybody here, thank you very much. I appreciate your patience in this awfully warm room.
Thank you so much again for coming. And I believe my favorite book has been stated more than once. If I have time to read, I am trying to spend that time developing my relationship with the Lord so that I can gain wisdom from that, because from that space much wisdom comes. I hope that your questions were adequately answered here today, and that if you are interested in consistent conservative representation, you'll vote Mary E. Beth Wyeth for House District 31. I also want to remind you again, you can start voting. Early voting is open now. You can vote anytime between now and the election on the 16th at the City of Homer or at the Soldotna or the Kenai Peninsula Borough in Soldotna office. And you need to cast your ballot, the Republican ballot. If you're Republican, undeclared, nonpartisan, you can vote the Republican ballot. In order to contribute to this particular vote, you have to vote the Republican ballot. So I'm hoping that that is a consistently conservative vote, and I look forward to being your representative. Thank you again for coming.
I forgot to give you my book.
Tell us.
I love reading history. It doesn't matter what it is. Just anything history. I just can't. I thrive on it. And let me give you another example real quick here. What's happening here to the state and the country, we're following in the same footsteps as the Roman Empire. We're spending more money than we have, and we will collapse if we don't make a change.
You have been listening to the Friends of the Homer Public Library District 31 Candidate Forum. The participants were Representative Paul Seaton of Homer, Homer Mayor Beth Wyeth, and John Cox of Anchor Point. The forum was recorded by Casey Marsh, edited and produced for broadcast by Daisha Ean and Terry Renzel. Thanks to the Friends of the Homer Public Library for allowing KBBI to record this forum for broadcast. You are listening to KBBI AM 890 Homer.